Hello, and welcome to the Mental Health Center of Greater Manchester's podcast, Mind Your Mentality, where your mind matters. I'm Patricia Carty, and I'll be the host for the very first episode. I am here with Peter Janelle and Bill Ryder, both of whom have served and retired as CEOs of our organization. And today we're going to discuss our respective tenures and the bonds that connect us to the Mental Health Center. So welcome.
Thanks, Patricia.
If you don't mind introducing yourself.
Sure. I'm Peter Janelle. I worked for the center. In fact, technically, I'm still working for the center now as a consultant, but have been with the center since 1979, and I served as the CEO from 1999 until 2015.
And hi, everyone. I'm Bill Ryder, and I came to the center in 1985, became the CEO in 2015, and then retired in 2022.
And I'm Patricia Carty. And I started at the center in 1986 and have been here my entire career and took on the role as a CEO when Bill retired in 2022. Well, one of the things that's very interesting is we've all been here or were at the center for long periods of time. So I think it might be a little fun to talk about sort of our journey and what led us into the mental health field and maybe that led us to the center.
Sure. It wasn't a plan to come to work to the center or to get into mental health. I was a psych major at UNH, and when I graduated, I knew that I would need to get a graduate degree, but I wanted to take a year off and earn some money. So I took a job at New Hampshire Hospital. That at the time, there were more than 1,000 people, I think, that were living there when I first started in 1976. I got hooked, and it was during a very exciting time. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of deinstitutionalization. That was the period when the state hospitals all around the country were getting smaller as people were being served in their home communities. So I did a lot of work. I worked in a geographic unit for the Manchester area. So I got to know some people down here in Manchester. And when our unit went from over 175 people inpatients down to below 50, I knew I had to be looking for some other work because it was going to keep getting smaller and smaller. So I came to work in Manchester to work in a program, working with people who I'd helped place into the community and who now were working to adjust to community living, and got into a supervisory position, a management position, and from there I've had different administrative positions with the center, and the last being the CEO and then the consultant. So it's been a place that I've never thought about leaving. It's kind of like opportunities professionally were there for me at the time when I was ready for them, and we did exciting work, and I met loads and loads of really wonderful people, our clients, their families, my coworkers, and it's just been terrific.
Very similar. I studied psychology in Buffalo, New York, which is my hometown. And I had a good friend who came to New Hampshire right after college and lived in Concord. And I came out to visit. And he suggested that I put in an application at the state hospital. So this was in the fall of 1976. And I did. And after my visit, I went home, and a few weeks later, I got a call from New Hampshire Hospital, and I came back out to Concord and got hired. And the person who gave me my two-week new employee orientation was Peter Janelle. And so boy from Buffalo meets dude from Durham, and we became good friends. I left the hospital after about 18 months and took a job with Carroll County Mental Health, which is in the Wolfboro, North Conway area of the state. And it was a really exciting job because it was all field work. And I met a lot of great families and wonderful patients. And I had great colleagues up there. I really enjoyed the community. And the biggest bonus was that I met my wife. And we had two kids right out of the gate, and realized that we didn't know how to raise kids in a rural area, both being from cities. And I happened to run into Peter, and he told me a lot of the exciting things that were happening in Manchester and that things were expanding. So it looked like an opportunity. So I took advantage of it and got a job in June of 1985. from there, the career just took care of itself because there was just so many things to do, and it was also very exciting. There was a time when our kids were small and we had no family in New Hampshire that we contemplated leaving. And it boiled down to the fact that I said to my wife, I said, I don't think I could ever find a job in any other organization that would be as supportive and like-minded and, you know, compassionate, forthright than the people who are working at Mental Health Center. And in life, it's a lot about who you're with. It's not necessarily about the money you make or the accomplishments you have, but the people who you're with, because it's the people that you're around who can make you a better person. And I feel like I'm a much better person after my career here at the Mental Health Center. So
I came here, and like I said, in 1986, after graduating from the University of Vermont, and had a whole bunch of interviews in the city here at private nonprofit agencies. But it was a time that we don't really see these days, that everyone wanted someone who had experience, and the people they were hiring were people who had experience. And I had zero experience just coming out of college. And my sister was someone who had worked at the Mental Health Center. She was a nurse, and she knew Peter Janelle, as Peter's wife and my sister were nurses and worked at the Mental Health Center together. And so she made a call, and I got an interview at the time with the residential person who oversaw residential, which was Diane Langley. I came in and was ultimately worried. She was going to say, but you really don't have any experience. And thankfully, she hired me. I had my first job working overnights at residential across two buildings, which at the time we used to cover, one staff covered two of our residential locations. Plus, it had a crisis beds component to it. I'll never forget my first day, because it was a very dark, cold day in January. And I walked into the residence, and the person who was working was just one staff person. That building itself held 22 residents plus four crisis beds. And the other building that we were also covering had an additional 16 beds. And she said to me, I gotta go. I can't wait. And the person who was working with you called in sick. And it was my first day on the job. I think about it now because our orientation and our onboarding, we spend so much time doing that with people. But back then, there wasn't that kind of attention to that. And she said, here are the meds. They're in that cabinet. Here are the keys. Here's the book that tells you the medicines that people take. And we've called a few people, and hopefully someone will come in eventually. The panic set in around the fact that I didn't know what I was doing. There were four people at the time in the crisis beds, which the staff office, the desks were in the living room part of where those crisis beds were. One of the patients at the time, the 6'5", 300-pound guy who was in one of the crisis beds, who had his both hands bandaged. I didn't know what had happened, and I'm thinking to myself, okay. He came up to me and introduced himself and said, don't worry, we'll help you. And I thought to myself, I cannot believe I'm here. And the patients who are here are offering their assistance to me, if you will, and their compassion at the very least. And in meeting all the patients before the second staff member arrived, I thought, I'm in the right place. That was the beginning of my career here at the Mental Health Center, and I haven't left since. I've learned so much from the people we serve and their families. I've learned so much from the people who I've worked with, as Bill describes. I've learned so much from the leaders who came before me, two of whom I'm lucky enough to have been mentored by and worked alongside. And there isn't a place, I think, that encouraged me, supported me, believed in me as someone who came in with zero experience than this place. It's also true that in our 10 years, we've all experienced rough times. And you all have had lessons that you've learned in your challenge points and your pivotal moments. So since I have you both and I have you captive, what are the things that you could tell me in terms of getting through, in terms of managing during turbulent moments?
For me, part of how I always would respond to challenges, and we all three had different types of challenges, and I will agree with Bill. Bill and I experienced nothing like the pandemic. As we all know, it was a unique period in the whole history of our country. But one of the things that I always would rely on is going back to the foundational elements of our organizations. What are the things that were really important to us? What could we rely on? And certainly could rely on each other. And that's always been the case. I was so fortunate during my 15 years as CEO to have Mr. Ryder be my chief operating officer. And it was a blast because I got to work with him again after many years, directly together again, after many years not working in the same place. But Bill referred to the work that we did around updating the mission and vision and creating a set of guiding values. And those guiding values, they were something that I used to draw upon all the time. You know, and if we were faced with some huge challenges, as we often were, I would pull them out and I'd think, what are the ones that are really going to be there for us in terms of getting through this? And we used to have town meetings, and I would always say to folks at the town meetings, I want to hear from you about our guiding values and principles. Do we live those principles? I'm always pleased when I hear that we are living them every day. But I also want to know if we're failing in some way. And is that something we need to work on? Or is it something that's no longer important? It was important when we created the original list of guiding values and principles. And, you know, we made them be alive. They were posted all over the place. We talked about them. And that's, I think, a failing sometimes of organizations where they do everything you're supposed to do, have a vision statement and mission statement, values. But do they really live into those? And I think that's key to getting through any kind of challenge.
I think one of the other things you did, Peter, you created connectivity with other organizations. So whether it be the hospitals or the community health centers or the area agencies and so on, and all the work that you did post-CEO as the leader of Network for Health, but you helped to build what I would consider to be that community resilience by making the effort to connect with other organizations. It's like you got your own stuff to deal with, your own ship to sail, but now you're really looking at the fleet and to give the community a powerful voice. And so I think that that's key, not to get so consumed internally, but to keep those external communications. And in order to do that, you have to rely on the people in your organization to run it while you're looking to build coalitions elsewhere, because there is strength in numbers. And there's also this concept that if we build a very strong healthcare system, which I think New Hampshire does, but it's a way of attracting people to come and work within this system.
Well, I always felt like I could go out and seek partnerships and make those connections because of the terrific people that worked at the center. Because I was confident that if we did get into some work with another organization, that our folks would be there for that and would give it everything that they can. We had great leadership. So I never hesitated to, maybe I got into some partnerships I shouldn't have, because I thought we would be able to do it. I knew we could do it, but what I didn't anticipate was the other organization might not have been in the same place that we were in terms of being ready for that work.
And Patricia, of course, does it. And did a lot of this during the pandemic, when a lot of organizations, we had to find a way to serve the people, you know, with all the troubles. So she did something, Peter, that you and I would never do. When things like were going down in the community and there sort of would be a role to you know, help make things happen among and between organizations, like I'm talking like at ground zero, Peter and I would find the best people in the organization to go out and do that, because we thought if we were out there, we'd just get in the way. But she, this woman here, she goes out, been out with mobile crisis, been out with the Manchester Fire Department, Police Department, you know, solving problems on the ground with the city leaders and the health department to make that happen. So one of the things that I think one of the dynamic stylistic differences between us and Patricia is that Patricia will get right in on the scene to see what's going on. And it's the reaction of others, I think, has been astounding. Not only our staff is incredibly proud of that hands-on approach and that in order to gain understanding, not to necessarily go in and tell people what to do, but to gain understanding has been really Patricia's MO.
I think the community issue is huge in terms of our partnerships, our relationships. Certainly is a big deal for us under our certification, our designation as a certified community behavioral health center. But I think one of the things that we all realize it, but we go through good times and bad times in our healthcare industry, is that we are better off when we are working together as a community, yeah, across organizations, leveraging our resources, swimming in the same direction toward the needs of our community and having impact on those needs as a collective. But this is going to require a sort of more radical collaboration where we are thinking well about our collective interdependence, where we can all still have be individuals as our organizations, but we think of ourselves as a collective as well. And I think that that is true across community partners. I think it's even more true probably across our safety net system of community mental health centers. We are, you know, in need, I think, of thinking of ourselves as a collective and thinking about how we do things and how we move our system forward,
yeah,
more actively and have that be sort of our primary outlook, knowing that we can still maintain a level of independence in how we do those right things. So I think it is one of the other things I think about is that when I took the role of CEO in 2022, you know, it was really important to me and important in leadership. We had really had all our leaders do an evaluation of their character strengths. You know, I think that when I got mine back, you know, you get back, it's like 26, 27 of your top character strengths, and you use those at different frequency, but you generally rely on like your top five. You know, you use those strengths in relationship, you use those strengths in business, you use those strengths in the work that you do each and every day. And I remember my top five were no surprise, but what was surprising to me is that within the first year, I was struggling with thinking about how I could manage all that was going on, the unwind, having an organization that was in deficit, worried about the staff, worried about our future, and realized that courage, bravery, was number 26 on my character strengths. And it wasn't something that I relied on the regular. At the same time, met with a woman who was writing a book about courage and leadership, and someone had referred her to me to have an interview for the book about courage and leadership. And I thought, you're talking to the wrong person. It's number 26 for me. And I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to talk about that in any reliable way. But with intention, from a mindful perspective, with intention, I started bringing bravery to the forefront and knowing that I had to do things with greater courage. This place means a great deal to me. I grew up here. I'm a lifer here. You know, that it's, I've certainly gained, I think, in my estimation, I've gained way more than I've given. It's always been pretty important. Our mission has been pretty important, the development of that mission, and knowing that that mission would impact our community. Can you reflect a little bit about your experience and the evolution of our mission?
Well, the mission statement is very different than the one that we had when I first started, and back in 1979. We talk about things like recovery, wellness. We didn't talk about those things in 1979. We were simply helping people return to their home communities after spending decades in an institution and their lives being controlled by others and their schedule being controlled by others. And so it was more focused on getting people, having people be safe and have a decent place to live. And there are more opportunities, I think, early on for some folks. But then today, I mean, it's really hard to find housing. But it's evolved, and that's a good thing. The center, I think, has evolved. And the mission statement really is kind of a reflection of what we've been doing and what we continue to do. Integrated care was not something that we talked about back in 1979, or probably not even until maybe the 90s when we started really exploring that. But having people who receive mental health care, that mental health care is coordinated with any of their other care and support that they get into the community. And so we've put a lot of focus on that. And Bill and Patricia were very forward-thinking when they took opportunities to get us more involved in the Certified Community Behavioral Health designation. And so I think that it's a testament to a whole lot of people over the years who worked at the center that, you know, having that desire to always improve, always learn new things, offering the people that we serve the very best care that's available. Oh, that's the other thing when I was looking at the mission statement, evidence-based. Oh my goodness, Bill and I did at New Hampshire Hospital. I mean, but just like your example, Patricia, in terms of that first day on the job, it was sort of the same thing there. I mean, you went on the floor and you just started talking to people. Today, though, we have the onboarding that Patricia referred to, but we also have practices that we can train people in that we know are effective because they've been scientifically studied. Just one more thing about that. When I was in some of the consulting that I've been doing, I was doing in the last two years, I was involved with the CCBHC Certified Community Behavioral Health Center designation. And I remember early on, I was on a call with leaders around the country who also centers that were offering or applying to be certified community behavioral health centers. And the topic was evidence-based practices. And requirement is you have to have evidence-based practices. And I was floored because these people, they were CEOs, they were program leaders, were kind of whining about, oh, well, you can't do more than one or two evidence-based practices. And he went, that's, you know, all the investment and really kind of complaining about it. And I thought, how could you work in a mental health center, run a mental health center, and not want every one of your patients to get the best available treatment all across the spectrum? And so that's been a hard thing to do. It's hard to implement a new evidence-based practice, but we've done it, I think, with integrity. And I feel really proud about that.
So I always felt like when I became the CEO in 2015, I felt like you had established what we're supposed to do and stylistically how we're supposed to do it. I felt like that was so clear to me. And I felt that there was only one thing left that I could add to that. Add that because I felt that these two things would protect that mission and those guiding values. And that was to help all of our staff know and come into connection with their own why. What was it in their heart? What was it about their upbringing? What was it that made them choose this field, and how can we as an organization really help them double down on that? Because if you are going to sustain yourself in a medical field like psychiatry, mental health, it has to come from deep within. And it's easy for all the day-to-day things that happen to potentially lose that. You know, we really worked a lot on helping people find their purpose, and we did that through a heavy, heavy emphasis on leadership, the concepts of leadership, and how leaders are not appointed. Leaders often come organically. People can develop leadership skills. You're not born with them. They're not necessarily a trait, but they are more of something that a strength that people can build on. And so our big emphasis was on, as Patricia mentioned, stewardship. If all the good things that got developed from the guiding values and principles of the mission were going to be sustained, and we were going to be good stewards of that, we had to develop a mechanism for creating the leadership skills, letting people know that we recognize that anyone has leadership potential, and we want to help them to feel empowered that way. And I felt that during that time, we did that. And a lot of that was with Patricia's help, because the one thing about our overlapping time is that we became very, very connected with these beliefs. And so what was, as I mentioned to you guys earlier, I felt I was very, very lucky, because I was like the bridge. I was like the Brooklyn Bridge, and you guys were the towers that held the cables of the Brooklyn Bridge. And, you know, Peter, you were the tower of the vision. You knew what this organization needed to evolve into if it was going to be a 21st century caring expert organization. And Patricia was the tower of implementation, and I was the bridge of comedy in between. Seriously, though, it's really very, very true. You know, sometimes you end up in the right place in life. I ended up, you know, being the bridge between the two of you. I'm so very grateful for that.
So I guess what I want to say is, because if the audience hasn't noticed, Bill Ryder is a humble person. And this idea of the bridge that he describes is, well, he's right. He brought comedy to us and laughter and fun. And you need that at work, and you need it particularly when things are not easy. But his greatest gift and one of his greatest strengths is, it is a good metaphor, the bridge, because you are all about connection and connectivity and bringing people together, and the bringing forward our why, and having us all really use that as the base by which we do our work on the hardest days. It's not a task on the easier days. It's on the hard days that we really have to bring that forward and bring our heart forward along with what we've committed to in our values. So that glue was critical to anything that was coming for our future. And so I just want to make sure that that's emphasized, because, you know, it has been a pretty critical part, and certainly something that, you know, we've had to carry forward. And the why for our staff still exists, and we ask people about it, and we reinforce that, and we reinforce that with our leaders, so that they're bringing that to their staff on a regular basis, so that they understand why they're here, why they do the work they do, regardless of their role. I think it's a much easier ask of our clinical staff who are working with patients and families in therapies. But the same is true for the business office person, the person who works in our accounting department.
No, absolutely. It
is the same why. You know, why choose a mental health center over another industry? If we can, in your reflections, talk about, you know, what was your greatest achievement here at the Mental Health Center? Maybe some of your best memories.
Well, if I think about achievements during my tenure as the CEO, I never think about them that they were my achievements, because anything I was successful at, it was because got the right people around the table, we figured it out, we supported each other. But the one thing that happened was when 1999, when I became the CEO, we had a community presence, thank God for Ken Snow, who was our VP of Community Relations, but that was it. We didn't have a development effort. We didn't capitalize on our fundraising, our nonprofit status in terms of raising funds to help offset some of the costs that we don't get reimbursed for. But one of the things that we did, and I'm pleased to say I'm sitting with two other of the founding members of the endowment fund for the Mental Health Center, that we created an endowment fund. We were a 40-year-old organization at that point. We didn't have an endowment fund. A couple other mental health centers did. we decided that we'd make a really special effort for that because we knew somewhere down the road, we're going to need that to help us get through the toughest of times. You can't just focus on your day-to-day, but you also have to be thinking, what about next month? What about next year? What about 10 years or 15 years?
Yeah, and I think, Peter, that what you did when you retired complemented that because you started the Janelle Family Scholarship Fund, which has now had how many years of disbursements for staff to advantage for themselves and their children for higher education?
Six or seven years. Yeah.
I don't think when you retired, you envisioned that we would have the workforce shortage that we have today, but your belief in the workforce and that compelled you to get people to invest in this has ended up being a benefit for our workforce today.
Well, I think it's important to point out that when it was created, we were targeting the staff and their families, and now it's staff members' kids or grandkids or whatever. And we were able to pivot in that way because of the tuition assistance that Bill and Patricia have put into place, because I think that's a huge recruitment and retention tool. Because that's so robust, we were able to offer more of these awards to our employees' kids. It's been really, the event when we present them, it's always just this wonderful experience. And
so I would just say that my greatest accomplishment is that I didn't screw it up too bad between Peter and you. That we made it through. We got the vehicle from one of the pillars over to the other, and that worked out. Being the CEO was the hardest role that I'd ever been in. I didn't think being the CEO was that hard. I mean, I saw Peter sweating a bit, but, I just thought he was being dramatic. It was how I became so aware of the incredible compassion, giving, skillfulness that the staff would bring, and how I became so incredibly aware of the courage of the families and the patients. And it was really with the help of you, Patricia, and Kristen Cornelis that we became a zero suicide organization very early on in that whole concept. And that came about because of a suicide that occurred and a family that had the courage to come and sit with me. And that gave us as an organization the resolve to say, this isn't happening again. Our staff are going to be so focused on this. It's going to be the universal assessment built in, hardwired to all encounters, and that every staff will have a minimum standard of expertise. And what's astounding in healthcare is that you could be in a hospital and need resuscitation, and not every person in a hospital might be able to resuscitate you. You know, obviously the people in the emergency room are very skilled with that, but nobody in the physician's office down the hall is interested in doing that. You know, because they think you can call on others. Well, I think it was the fact that we believe that every single person had a responsibility to be aware that suicide is the thing that you do not want to have happen when you are in the business of trying to help people find a better life. And we were able to do that.
Kind of amazing, you know, when you look back and you think about all the things and where we were, where we are. I know that for me, you know, one of the things that I think about is the rollout of our mobile crisis team as an accomplishment that I look back on and think about the first night of which I worked alongside our two directors and two peers because we had no staff yet and we needed to get it started. And a police officer who stood at the doorway and didn't know what to do as part of our team. I think about the work that we did with the Manchester Police Department and our focus on bringing crisis intervention training to the police department since 2016 and our evolution as a crisis team that has evolved and is now part of a statewide system of 988 and being available to our community, our greater Manchester community, and then some 24/7 providing, care in the place that someone determines is the right place for them, you know, within an hour of a call. And our general response time is much shorter than that. And being able to do follow-up care so that person, their family, whoever's involved, is supported through a time of crisis in their own environments, and having a team that's so skillful at assessment, safety planning, caring contacts, being able to do that and do it and train police officers to think about compassionate justice, if you will, in a way that brings their role into new light. And I think that that has been big change in our system of care, and certainly is still evolving at a statewide level. And knowing that even now, as in a statewide system, our team is deploying out of even our own catchment area about 25% of the time to respond to other areas in the state. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that I sit here and I think about our histories together and how grateful I am to have had the opportunity not just to work with you, work alongside with you, but to know you as people and the amazing human beings that you are. And I got the benefit of learning from both of you. So that's an incredible thing. And
we've learned so much from you. I mean,
yeah. Bi-directional.
Yeah.
And I have way too many memories and moments of laughter that keep you sane in the work. But the biggest thing is that this morning reminds me of the fact that I've learned so much about leadership from the both of you, and the fact that leadership is never about status, and it's always about stewardship.
Yeah.
There is no doubt in my mind, both of you came to this place and you left this place way better than when you came to it, for the benefit of all of us, for all of our staff, for the people that we serve, and for the community that means so much to us. So I thank you for that.
I'd like to say you're welcome, but I think that Pierre and I feel mutually, because it's been, it took a village, right?
I have to say that when Nick contacted us about doing this podcast, I was a little nervous because I've never done a podcast before. But anytime I can get together with Patricia and Bill, I'll do it. And it's been just terrific. And I value you as my colleagues, but more importantly, I value you as my friends. So thank you.
So I want to thank you all for listening to the first episode of Mind Your Mentality. Pierre and Bill, it was a pleasure to have you. The two of you have contributed so much to the center, and it's only right for the three of us to come together for this special moment. We thank you. Have a great day.